Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. My name is Matt Anderson. I am the Late Night Gamecock, joined as always by Rob Williams of thebigspur.com. Four Quarter Friday, SEC Sunday night, the hardest working man in the business. Rob Williams, how are you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic. I'm locked in on NCAA baseball and softball in preparation for SEC Sunday night. Got to pay attention to both of those brackets a little bit, what's going on. It's been fun though, Matt. I mean, you obviously get the lack of Garnett and Black in the tournament this year on the baseball side and an early exit for the softball team. However, we've had some upsets and some fun things going on, so it's been entertaining just to kind of have it on and not have to be on the edge as much, watching to see what Carolina's going to do, but watching a couple of these potential head coaching candidates out there and how they're performing in the tournament too. So keeping an eye on it. What's going on with you?
Yeah, I feel the same way, man. I mean, golly, it's so crazy that tomorrow the transfer portal opens for baseball, and like there are regionals that are not yet settled. And one of the coaching candidates is going to be playing tonight and tomorrow for South Carolina baseball. Well, maybe tomorrow. Depends on if you hope for it or you don't hope for it.
Yeah, well, I'm
But
looking at it right now.
yeah, so we'll get to it here in a minute, but it is May 31st, the last day of May. And Rob, I say it all the time, like the older I get, the faster like months end and years end, and we're inside of 100 days for college football. It doesn't seem like it's been 100 days since college football ended. And maybe it hasn't. I don't know, with the national championship, bleeding into January, but oh man, we never stop here on the Late Night Gamecock Show. We never stop on Inside the Gamecocks. And Rob Williams never stops on Four Quarter Friday and SEC Sunday night. Tonight on the show, we're going to talk a little bit of recruiting. The Gamecock football program is in the middle of, well, not in the middle. They're about to start camps on Tuesday. They've already had one official visit weekend that, if you want to go back and watch that episode, Rob and I had JC on here. We broke it down. I think a number of those recruits are still in play one way or another, whether South Carolina took them, passed on them, or they're still making their decisions. But oh, golly, Rob, what, Friday, June 5th, you're going to have another batch of official visitors come in. And then after that, it's pretty much every weekend, pretty much every weekend through June. We're going to talk a little bit of football stuff too. We're going to look at this piece of the offensive pie. Who gets what? Who should get what? And I know that Shane Beamer and Kendall Briles are watching this show anxiously awaiting
I
what
feel
Rob
you.
and I have to say there. And then, of course, we got to get to baseball. We kind of touched on it a moment ago. Baseball is heating up with the coaching search. Kendall Rogers has already said that it's looking like Coastal Carolina's Kevin Schnall or West Virginia's Kevin Sabins. I think is this, I know, is it Kevin Sabins or Kevin Schnall and Steve Sabins?
I think it's
Yeah.
Steve Sabins. And as you said that, Kentucky takes a 7-6 lead here in the bottom of the fourth against West Virginia and Steve Sabins. If the Cats win this game, it's over. And then you'll have both of those top coaching candidates free of coaching baseball by tomorrow morning, Matt.
Well, they're still under contract at their prospective schools, but yes, free of coaching baseball for this season and what that may mean, we'll talk about here in a little bit. But Rob, let's go ahead and get into it, man. Big official visit weekend coming up.
Yep.
On, I guess, what, June 5th, they're going to welcome one, I mean, close to a dozen recruits on campus. We're going to talk about a handful of them here. But first, what we have to talk about is camp season's coming up. And for those of you that aren't familiar with camp season, you're going to have what's called offensive and defensive line camp. Those are side by side with 7-on-7 camps. So if you were to go look at Shane Beamer's football camp schedule, you can see it. I mean, heck, you can come out there and watch if you want to. No one's going to stop you. But on offensive and defensive line days, it's also 7-on-7. So there will be high school teams from Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida out there competing on seven on sevens. And any day it's just football camp, that is literally, Rob, like a high school football combine. That's when they're going to be putting these kids through measurements, height, weight, 40s. At the end of the day, they have a fastest man in camp competition. So it's a lot of fun. I know that I will be there for the majority of these camps. I'm always excited to get there. And I know Rob's going to make as many as he can with his work schedule. But it's weird, Rob, because like what I love about these camps is, especially if you're there on a Friday, you see all the official visitors roll in. And then you see like, hey, I want to introduce you to this quarterback over here. Yeah, he had a good day today. And hey, look, this guy's over here. Come on, let's go meet with this person. You can watch what the coaches do. It's a lot of fun. But right now, the Gamecock recruiting class is ranked 28th in the country, 11th best class in the SEC, which just proves how difficult the SEC is year in and year out when you have a top 30 recruiting class in the nation, but you don't have a top 10 recruiting class in your conference. So what we're going to do, Rob, and we'll just go back and forth on this and tell me where you think I might be wrong or where I might be right. But quarterback recruiting, I think it's done with Jerry Meyer III committing. Have you heard anything differently?
No, I don't think so. You know, I agree. That's pretty much in line with what I've been hearing. I think the interesting thing here is to see if anybody pops, Matt, that may be worth taking as just like a depth piece type of deal. Nobody that is really – I mean, everybody's expected to compete in a Shane Beamer football team, but just somebody that just adds something to the room. Or the other thing that I'm looking out for in terms of quarterbacks at these camps are the athletic quarterback inside of the state, typically, that they're going to turn into something else. So in terms of playing the position of quarterback, I think that they're pretty much done. I wouldn't ever rule out that there's going to end up being an athlete that plays quarterback for his high school team that ends up on this roster. We've seen that movie before, and it typically stars Torian Gray.
You're not wrong there, Rob. And, you know, I can go back to last year at camp season, and you had A.J. Brand there, or maybe that was 2 years ago, but it was A.J. Brand, and then you had Cutter Woods. And they were both at the same camp, and there was just a stark difference in both of those players. And the thing that I remember is the Gamecocks have been flirting with Landon Duckworth, committed, not committed, committed, not committed. And Cutter Woods was out there 2 years ago, man, just dialing it up. And like when I say it was impressive, it was very, very impressive. And then all of a sudden you saw Dowell Loggins hanging out with Cutter Woods. Then you saw Mike Shula hanging out with Cutter Woods. And then at the end of it, you had Mike Shula, Dowell Loggins, and Shane Beamer all standing behind every single one of Cutter Woods' throws in the 7-on-7 championship. And we know what happened 2 years ago. Cutter Woods got that offer that day. He was committed to Wake Forest. And I looked at the people that I was standing with, Rob, and I said, that kid's going to commit to South Carolina at some point because of the attention that he got. So A.J. Brand, though, like to your point, Rob, A.J. Brand was a kid that they wanted to play in the secondary with Torian Gray. And the kid was a field general, a dude, a guy that was out there that commanded the respect of everybody. And so you never know where it's going to go. And like these little combine tests will be fun. At wide receiver, the Gamecocks have Javian Robertson and DJ Huggins committed. I think they're probably going to take at least one more guy, Rob. Have you heard any rumblings of taking maybe two?
I think it's one of those things where if it's the right combination of guys, you can kind of look at what's left on the board. We have information about, and you can figure that out based on who the official visitors are, about who is left on the board. But to be fair, like you and I aren't walking into the Long football building and actually looking at the board. So there could be a hidden guy that we're not aware of. And that's where I say, Matt, if there's a specific combination of guys that want to say yes, it could be a situation where you can't, that you're not going to turn away those two, if that makes sense. However, I kind of lean towards your point about three. You want to continue to backfill with that freshman talent, but you still have this very talented group that you pretty much held together other than Brian Rowe that were freshmen last year. A lot of those guys we just talked about on the show last week, a little bit, kind of in the crosstalk, right about the time that you were coming in with JC and Phil and moving things over on Friday, we talked a little bit about kind of the depth that's there. Malik Clark, Jordan Gidron, some of these guys that still haven't made a name for themselves in game action, but have all the pieces, all the tools. There's a lot of depth there, not to mention the guys that came in the transfer portal this year. So when you look at the receiver room, it looks pretty full and it is well balanced as it is right now. So you do want some freshmen, but I don't think you need to take a huge class like last year. I don't think that really sets the precedent for what they're going to do year in and year out, where you're going to have six freshmen.
Well, it's weird, Rob, you know, because you think about it and every single program in the country is shopping the portal, and they're shopping the portal nonstop. But guess what happens, Rob? National Signing Day is before the portal opens.
Yep.
So I've never seen, heard, or anything of a proven college player saying, I'm scared of a freshman. So I think that you can say, hey, you'll go portal shopping in some cases, and you can. But at the same time, like, you still need to backfill your roster because there's 105 scholarships now. You're going to have 20 players transfer out every single season. So I think, and like Rob said, if you just watch like the official visits and the guys that Carolina's still after, and you can go on thebigspur.com, you can pay $1. You can read every article, every little news blurb, every message board post, and you can see that they have more wide receivers coming on campus. So like what Rob and I try and do is just educate, like follow the visits. If they're still recruiting people and paying money for them to come on an official visit to South Carolina, they're probably still recruiting somebody else.
And that's the thing too, Matt, I would say as we watch that, and as you listeners, viewers, fans watch that, it's not just if they're paying for them to come back on campus that they're still recruiting them. They're still in it. If you know what I mean? Like they have a reason to believe that there's still a reason to be in the fight. Because once it is abundantly clear that a player has moved on, I think that there is still a considerable evaluation point, I guess you would say, from the staff on, well, what does that mean? And do we continue to recruit this guy, or is there an inevitable commitment upcoming somewhere else? And I think kind of that's been the line in the sand for this staff, is once there's a commitment for some guys, you can see them kind of move forward. And for others, you're still trying to get in the mix. Jaden Bryant would be one, not in this immediate official visit, but you'll kind of see as the summer moves on that they're still after.
Yeah. And a lot of this is also like an official visit. Like, okay, like Rob and I can't sit here and say that every single player committed to the Gamecocks right now is, you know what they say, Rob, 110% committed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to have people in the chamber, for lack of a better phrase there, to say, okay, well, we have this relationship, we have this commitment, whatever. A tight end, dude, this is where I think the Gamecocks might go portal hunting, Rob. Maybe they'll add one more. They already have Judah Lancaster in the fold. I'm a big portal guy on tight ends. Like, get one a year, develop them, see what you can do. But they're still recruiting other tight ends, and they're going to have one on campus in 2 weeks, I believe. And we'll see where it goes. But probably only one more, right?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that, you know, Judah Lancaster is one of these kids that has a lot of the tools to do multiple things. I talked to him right after his commitment, and that was one of the statements that we talked about, was that he is, and I think that Wes Mitchell used the term dual threat tight end, meaning a blocking and a pass catching tight end. But that was directly from Judah Lancaster when I talked to him as well, that was the plan that was laid out for him, that they believe he can do both things. So when you get somebody that's more versatile, that you believe has the ability to do both things, you might not have to specialize and get as many players that are going to fit different molds. Sometimes you see with tight end rooms, whether it's in South Carolina or somewhere else, you want to build it with guys who are different body types, who can do multiple things, similar to the defensive line, where you're going to have like a plugger type of guy at the nose that may be a true zero technique, and then you're going to have some threes. And then you move out to your edge rushers and so on and so forth. And some of those guys are going to be different body types that can maybe shift from one position to another. A lot of times when this defense has gone like into a 3-3 stacked front, you've seen guys that move from inside to outside, compete a little more because their body type worked better in that system. The same thing I think is true, Matt, with the tight ends. It's such a flexible position because there's so much that you can ask them to do. You can slide them back as an H-back. You can split them out. You can make them an extra offensive lineman. There's a lot of different things that can be utilized. And we'll see Kendall Briles, I think, get creative and try to utilize these guys to the best of their abilities. So when it comes to recruiting in that way, I think that we're starting to see that a little bit too with a guy like Judah Lancaster who can come in and kind of get it done in multiple ways so that you can have almost a Swiss Army knife type of guy to be developed by Sean Elliott and put into this system. I think it's a beautiful match, and it doesn't leave you needing to go out and get a whole bunch of tight ends. And the portal has been really good to South Carolina and the tight end market as well.
It really has. And when you think about Sean Elliott, he's coached offensive line, he's coached tight end, he's been all around the place when it comes to position recruiting. And if I'm recruiting a tight end, I want a dual threat guy that Sean Elliott can say, hey, this is what the offensive line is going to ask you to do if you have to slide in there and be in line. Offensive line recruiting, Rob, this is where I think the Gamecocks probably just need to get as many guys as they can. You already have two guys committed. I think you could see as many as 5 to 7 in this class, because offensive line is that one place where, although the Gamecocks went portal shopping last year, it's very difficult to go get offensive tackles. It's very difficult to go get studs on the offensive line. You kind of got to home grow them.
No, I completely agree. And this is where we see a guy like Shed Surratt, who's going to be a second year guy in the program, and showed a lot of promise last year, kind of coming on a little stronger than some people expected him to. Mm-hmm. But when you have a guy like that and you're able to hold on to him because everybody else is portal shopping as well. And we know portal shopping means shopping current rosters, not necessarily guys who are actually in the portal. We've talked about this a ton on SEC Sunday Night for years. Years ago, it was explained to us by coaching staffs, ADs, et cetera, that the initial move for the portal, and this is off on an aside a little bit, but just in case people aren't aware, the initial move for the portal was to have backup players in the handshakes after games going ahead and putting bugs in the ear of a player. So we know that everybody is well informed by the end of the season who's interested in you, whether you plan to get in the portal or not. And so it doesn't even take a kind of back-channeled phone call from an uncle to a cousin or agent talk or any of that stuff, or you entering the portal. It happens right there on the field before in the middle of the season. As soon as the game is over, these conversations are being had. But to your point about the offensive line, I think Shed Surratt is kind of the model for what they want to do. I think Darius Gray comes in this year and makes an impact as a true freshman. And then you'll see him second year in the program continue to grow. They hit last year, Matt, we think.
Yeah.
We think in the portal with this offensive line, especially with Jacarius Peak, because you already seen what he can do. However, that you're right. You don't want to go there time and time again looking for your starters every single year. This year was a little different because it's a brand new offensive system, new offensive coordinator, new offensive line coach, new running backs coach. So everything that, you know, half of what that offensive line is doing is setting up the run game. And so all of that looks completely different, and you needed a different type of guy to make that happen. So again, for people that maybe just paid attention last year, just like receivers, 6 freshmen came in, not the precedent. A huge portal class of offensive linemen to kind of overhaul that room shouldn't be your precedent. There should be guys who are back there sitting and waiting. Offensive line, even in the transfer portal era, is a third-year starter type of position. And when I say that, I mean first-time starter in your third year, because you're sitting under guys, you're developing, you're getting there, you're learning a system, you're growing into your body, you're having grown man strength become a part of your DNA, right? Like, this is not a thing where we should see portal shopping be the primary, nor should we continue to think that freshmen are just going to come in like Shed Surratt and what we think Darius Gray is going to do this year. That's a little abnormal as well.
Well, it's, I mean, I don't know. I haven't researched this. Maybe it's something I should research, Rob, but at the end of the day, I don't know if there have been more than a handful of programs that have brought in nine transfer offensive linemen in an offseason. So to your point, yeah, it's not the norm. It's probably not going to be what's expected going
It's
forward.
teams that have terrible offensive lines the previous year. It's teams that have coaching changes. That's where you see that type of number show up.
Yeah, and I mean, just the fact they brought in nine, I think maybe one or two of them have eligibility past next year.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're gonna have to rebuild that. And defensive tackle, man, they got Jon Archer committed, who might be one of the best defensive tackles in the country, if not the best, quite frankly. I mean, everyone that I've talked to raves about that kid. But defensive tackle, defensive end, offensive line, that's where you just want to pile up bodies, especially. You get the best you can, and South Carolina's in it with some really good defensive tackles. I think they'll probably take one to two more defensive tackle. They have zero defensive ends committed right now, Rob. So they're going to have to get to three or four, maybe even five. I mean, South Carolina is in a unique position right now where, to me, Rob, it seems like they're slow playing some four-star top, let's say 150 to 250 defensive ends in the class, which makes me feel like they kind of have some guys earmarked,
Yeah,
which is
I think
really
they do.
exciting if you're a Gamecock fan.
I agree. You look back at the first official visit weekend, and a guy that really stuck out was Desmond Mallprice, who was out of Jacksonville, 6'3", 205. This is a kid who I spoke to his coach, and he talked about kind of his raw athleticism, his ability to jump. His 40 time was extremely impressive. And he's a guy that JC really liked when looking at the tape too. He fits into the category that you just talked about though, Matt. He's kind of in that four-star range where, the question for me is, are they going on some quote unquote higher rated guys that they feel really good about before they decide who's coming into the boat? Left that weekend in good shape with Malpras. We'll see how that moves going forward. Now, the kid still has to make a decision, right? You still have to recruit him and you still have to get him in if you need him. But it could be a situation where if they hit everybody, this is recruiting. If you hit everybody at the top of your board and you're full, then what do you do with that type of situation? So, yeah, I think that kind of slow playing is a great word. And the way that is playing out for us, you can look down the board. We've already seen Fred Ards, right? Like that's a guy who everybody was high on, but you can look kind of what's coming down the pipe in terms of potential in commitments. KJ Green is there. Jaden Bryant, I mentioned before, who's committed to LSU, but right there in their backyard in Irmo is there. You got a handful of guys, Whitehead, who are out there and recruitable guys. So we'll see how that develops. But I agree with you. I think three is probably a minimum. I think they would like to see four guys in the class there.
Well, I'll tell you this, Rob, and this is just my opinion on it. Like when you talk about transfers, like I mentioned earlier, like no transfer that's coming in that's been proven in another program that's going to get paid at this program is worried about a freshman. But other high school seniors are actually worried about other players coming into their position, which sounds a little bit crazy in this transfer portal time period, but you have to be very particular because you can take the bird in the hand and maybe go grab a Malpras and then pick up another guy. And then like those two or three elite guys that are still out there, like, well, they took this other guy. What's my role here? Like, am I, and like, this is how I say this, Rob, I don't know where you fall, like the LeBron, MJ, Kobe thing, but like, this is the LeBron era of like, I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. Like he committed ahead of me. Like I can find somewhere else to go. And like, it's the era of feelings. And like, that's a weird thing that coaches have to balance right now, because right now, like, I think that the Gamecocks are doing what they should do and running the race and saying, look, you're our guy. We're going to run this race with you. And at the end of the day, like I see Harrison saying in the chat box that a crystal ball came in for Malpris to Clemson. I mean, as a Gamecock fan, it's kind of nice if you can let Clemson have your leftovers. But I will say that you do that too many times and those guys get a little edge. They get a little bit of anger in them and they will
don't let that one come back
when they have the opportunity.
Don't let that one come back to bite you if that's what ends up happening.
When
you had a chance to lead. I mean, Harrison noted there that that Rivals has South Carolina as his leader, crystal ball on 24/7. So a little bit of a differing information coming in on Malpris. But, you know, he's just the one that sticks out to me, Matt, as we look at this edge position where they were in good, they're in really good shape. I don't have any intel. So somebody in it may have better intel than I do to say
the only intel I have, Rob, I can
moved or haven't moved.
I'll just say this. They feel good about guys above him on their board. And that's when you have to trust the coaching staff.
Right.
And
yeah, I'm right there with you on that.
Yeah. So, all right. So really quick, we got to get through this and we got to hear from our sponsors. Linebacker, man, I think they're going to have to take at least two, maybe as many as four. And they have a number of linebackers coming in. Secondary, man, like Torian Gray wants numbers. And what Torian Gray wants, I just give him at this point. He's earned it. Sure. He's getting paid a lot of money to be the best secondary coach in the country. So, I mean, like, if you look at linebacker and secondary, Rob, like over under eight players combined at those positions.
Yeah, I might go slightly under and grab the seven there, but it could go either way.
Yeah.
Matt, to be honest with you, camp is so interesting because we're looking, you know, this discussion is two different things. The official visits are very predictable-ish because we kind of have a list, right? We know who's supposed to be there. And sometimes there's last-minute changes and things that go really, really well, and maybe something doesn't go quite as well on a visit or whatever. Camp is different. Somebody could pop at camp, and it throws an extra player or two into these numbers when we're trying to set over-unders on how many position group guys we're expecting. Tristan Lewis is the latest Torian Gray addition that played quarterback. He played for Greenwood last year, and I would expect that he's gonna push for the two deep as a true freshman at corner. As a high school quarterback last year, freak athlete. This is the type of kid that Torian Gray finds, that he loves, and those are the type of camp evaluations that we could see, and that could just blow up this whole. How many players do we think?
Oh, it can blow it up entirely. And I'll tell you a funny thing here, Rob. And like, I'm not telling you because you know this. I'm more telling our viewers and our listeners. But Tamarian Watkins, right? South Carolina wanted him. He went to Texas A&M. He got paid a decent amount of money to go there. And Gamecocks just said, well, we'll go get Tristan. Like, I mean, seriously. Like, it was like that, like where – Gamecock fans saw his recruiting ranking at top player in the state, and the Gamecock coaching staff said, enjoy the money, son. Like, brought him in for a little secret visit, a little unofficial official visit later in the season. They didn't play the game. They were happy with what they found. So I like to say this, Rob, and you play golf. I know you like to watch golf. Like, what's Saturday called, Rob?
Moving day.
And guess what? Official visits and camp season.
Yeah.
This is moving day. June is sure. Moving day. And you'll see where the Gamecocks land. Before we hit a quick break, I do want to run through this. And Rob, you know, feel free to stop me whenever you want to. But the Gamecocks are going to have a lot of recruits on campus June 5th. So it's before we will talk to you again on this show. We'll be recapping these official visits next Sunday. But they got a four-star linebacker in Makai Allen from New Jersey. I feel comfortable in saying the Gamecocks are in his top three, maybe even in his top two. Four-star defensive tackle Nate Kamba from North Carolina. Gamecocks are in his top two. I think this might be that dreaded situation, Rob, where if Georgia wants a defensive tackle that the Gamecocks won't, they get him. We will see.
I really like Kamba's tape though. And it's one of those, you try not to get attached to certain recruits that you're looking at.
Oh, I always do.
I completely agree with what you're saying because I do think of South Carolina and Georgia there. And it's a situation where it just, how hard do they put the hammer down? But we've seen them beat We've seen South Carolina beat Georgia on other recruits in this cycle. DJ Huggins comes to mind. So we'll see. Defensive tackle is maybe a little different type of situation, but we'll see what they can do. It's a good opportunity. Like you said, it's moving day, so we'll see this weekend with Comba specifically.
Well, I'll tell you, like, I mean, I think Gamecock fans in general just have, you know, PTSD with Georgia and a defensive tackle. No doubt. It just never seems to work out for the Gamecocks for a variety of reasons we've talked about. Like, sometimes that Georgia scheme just fits better for a defensive tackle and what they're trying to do. Golly, Rob, I kind of want you to say this person's last name. I'm not even sure, but I can at least say success.
I think it's Weibude.
That's not what I would have said. Four-star defensive end. Rob, this official visit got put together pretty quickly.
Yep.
You know, I think the Gamecocks are definitely in his top five. I think he only has four official visits, but this is the definition of moving day. Let's see what the Gamecocks can do this weekend here. You got a number of commitments that are going to be on campus. Three-star wide receiver Javian Robinson, three-star wide receiver DJ Huggins committed. You have Will Endicott and Jackson Elson, offensive lineman commitments. And then
Matt, do you think that, like, this weekend, because there's so many of them, this is a thought in my head kind of looking over the list again today. How does it benefit them? I guess is in my mind, there's a lot of commits as opposed to what we've seen. You know, the class isn't all that big yet, but when you look across the other official visit weekends, like this one's kind of stacked in terms of guys that are already in the boat. Does that help, quote unquote, moving day? Because you just kind of rattled them off. There's, what was that, four?
Yeah, right, four commits.
So that's really four guys that in a lot of ways don't count in terms of how much you have to woo them. Now, can you put somebody on them and give them some intentionality and attention? Sure. I mean, but also they're in the boat. How can you empower them and mobilize them to help them get other people in the boat? That gives them value, and that gives you more time to prioritize some of the other guys. I'll be interested to see if we get some major movement this weekend and if that's a factor, because there's so many guys here that are already in the boat.
Well, on these type of weekends, this is when, like, those group chats you hear about get started.
Yeah.
And it's, how you feeling, man? Like, well, hey, why don't you just hop in this group chat? Like, we'll talk to you about the Gamecocks, answer any questions you got. So it can help. And the other thing is, you know, there's another big official visit weekend later on in the summer. And if these guys have already taken their OV, now watch them come back as unofficial visitors and do recruiting duty times two.
Yep.
So I think that's where it helps. I know that three-star defensive end Josiah Fields was originally scheduled to be an official visitor. Not going to happen. He's committed to Louisville. He was teammates with Nate Comba, or he still is teammates with Nate Comba. But that's kind of why those official visits, like, we can stacked up together. Three-star defensive back Kelvin Millington is a guy that's probably a four-star. If you see the definition of a Taurean Gray type recruit, it's this kid. He has visits to two Techs on the docket after this weekend in Texas Tech and Virginia Tech. I think this is one where the Gamecocks try and put the full court press on. He's been very open to the Gamecocks, very excited about this visit. I'm going to say commitment watch, and we'll see what happens if he doesn't commit. Is that fair, Rob?
Yeah, I think that they want to go get this kid this weekend, and I think that they probably should. He jumps out right off the board. When you look at the visitors coming in this weekend, just measurables, and then you go to the tape, obviously, to see what's there. But just measurable-wise, I've said it, you've said it, multiple of our colleagues on Gamecock Central and the Big Spur have said it, because it's so obvious he looks like a Taurean Gray defensive back.
Yeah.
It just screams and leaps off the page when you look at his measurables, and when you look at him just to kind of see his frame standing next to literally anybody else, you can tell what he's working with. And I think that he's a great fit. And he's like you said, been very positive and responsive when it comes to Gamecock attention. So we'll see what's going on there.
Oh, this one kind of goes hand in hand with three-star linebacker Jackson Ross from Columbia.
Yeah.
Another kid that Texas Tech is interested in. Like, look, his dad played basketball at Carolina, David Ross, His dad is a great guy. Jackson is a great kid. But I am just going to let you know that don't pencil in Jackson for South Carolina football. Coaches love him. They want to get him in the boat. But this is a situation where I think, Rob, like, I'm trying to say this the best way I can, but, like, Jackson Ross just isn't a private school linebacker from Columbia that is dying for a Gamecock offer. Like, his dad played there, but this kid is getting NIL money from other schools. It's not just, like, happy to be here type situation. And I'm just saying don't rule out Texas Tech because there is a world where NIL works out. You know, Rob, you and I were both 18, 17 at one point, and going away for college sounded pretty good, right?
Yeah, and going away and getting a bag at the same time would have also been fantastic. So
we'll be back next week. Texas Tech's dropping bags everywhere.
I mean, we can call it what it is at this point. There's not and nobody's faulting kids for that either, for what it's worth. Like,
no, I don't.
That is exactly your point. We were 17, 18 years old at one point in time. And if you'd have come and told me that I could go to the University of Michigan, you know, far away in the cold for X amount of money, and I'm not talking scholarship dollars, then, yeah, you'd have my attention.
I'm going to say the heat works. I'll pay the heat bill. It's fine.
Exactly.
But we'll be back next week, and we'll talk all about this official visitor weekend. We'll preview the next weekend. We got to hit a sponsor break and we come back. I got some interesting questions for Rob, and I want to hear his take on what the offense looks like next year and who he thinks the ball should be in the hands of. Well, welcome back to the Late Night Gamecock Show. Again, my name is Matt Anderson. This is Rob Williams joining me. And I got to give a very quick shout out to Palm Casual. Yesterday, my in-laws were looking for some patio furniture. They were going to the beach, Myrtle Beach. They went to the Myrtle Beach location of Palm Casual because they were celebrating their 36th wedding anniversary. So, you know, God bless them. God bless that marriage. I hope God blesses all of you in every single way in your entire lives. But they said, Matt, do you know a place? And I said, go to Palm Casual. They were blown away. They just said that the quality was top notch. They're going to be making purchases there. So super cool. And then obviously Flavortown Eats. Love my guy Kirby, best food in the world. And then I don't know if those lottery tickets are still out there for you, but you can still support the South Carolina Education Lottery by buying any lottery ticket. Just go buy one. It's a dollar. Have fun. Scratch it off.
Well, there are many of us who benefited from that, from scholarships that I, you know, that was me. I went to school for free because I qualified for a scholarship based on those South Carolina state scholarships. So I can vouch for it. And I appreciate it. Irony of all that is that I went to a private Christian school and qualified based on a lottery scholarship, but you know, whatever, that's a different conversation for another day.
Hey man, like NCAA tournaments, gambling, drugs, alcohol, whatever you want nowadays. So who cares? But so, Rob, I had a fun article that I put together on thebigspur.com the other day, and it was basically talking about how last year under Mike Shula, over 20% of the targets in the offense went to players who just couldn't manufacture yards. And where I want to start with this, Rob, I'm sure you know this. I hope you know this, but I like yards per target better than I like yards per reception. Because a target is every time the quarterback throws you the ball, you're expected to get X amount of yards, right? And, like, I actually like yards per route run better, but I can't find those metrics. Yep. But so how do you get a target, Rob? You earn it. The quarterback has trust in you. The quarterback's willing to throw the ball to you. The offensive coordinator is willing to put you in a position to succeed. So last season, far too often, Rob, players were getting targets and not doing much with it. I'll give you a great example. You know, Brian Rowe was one of the pass catchers that had at least 30 targets. Well, on those 30 targets, he averaged 4.8 yards per target. That's not great. The flip side of that is Nick Harbor. Nick Harbor averaged 11.9 yards per target. And he had a 15% target share. Vandrevis Jacobs had a 15% target share, averaged 11 yards per target. So the question I have to start for you, Rob, is were those the only two guys on the team last year capable of securing yards on targets, or was it a situation where the roster wasn't utilized in its best way?
Yes. Can I say yes to all of that? No, I think that when you look at it, first of all, that 11 yard per target thing really sticks out to me because that moves the chains. And when I'm looking at throwing the football, I'm more than likely trying to move the chains on just about every pass, Matt. Like, we can run the ball to set up as an offensive minded person or whatever. You can run the ball to set up something else, or you can pass the ball to set up the run. But we all know that runs in certain situations exist to get 3 yards or to get 1 yard. You should have a 1 yard running play in your arsenal. You should have a 3 yard run. You're going to have some passes like that too, some quick outs, whatever. But most passing plays are designed to get into that intermediate range, even if they're thrown at the line of scrimmage. They're not intended to be screens that go for 2 yards. They're intended to move the chains. And so when a guy is averaging beyond the 10-yard marker in a target, that does jump out to me. I don't think that those are the only two that were capable last year, Matt, but I do think that those two probably – Nick Harbor, simply because they sent him on a lot of either posts or go balls or whatever the case was. There was not a lot of underneath stuff for him in terms of slants, and they – got away from using him around the line of scrimmage, which I think is one of the actual things that was a good move. But he does need to develop that route tree a little more fully. Jacobs, on the other hand, had a few more, a little more variety in there.
Yeah.
Outside of that, the offense just wasn't really conducive to moving the ball, spreading the ball around. And Lenore Sellers had so much trouble in the pocket. That was nice, by the way. The mic just picked up Matt Crack.
Sometimes, man, it just feels good. It sounds good. It's all
holy cow. Call chiropractor Matt, and we're signing you up for an ad special next time. Okay. I think Jaden Sellers is obviously capable of averaging, a pretty high yards per target number, that 10-11 range. And we saw something similar out of Mazio Bennett in his freshman season. So to say he's not capable, I don't think is the right phrase there. Can he make a comeback again this year? Sure. I'm interested, Matt, to see guys like Donovan Murph. How does that development continue? What does he look like with another year under him? And then you're bringing in guys who are more proven to have. What's Nitro? Do we know Nitro Tuggle's yards per target at previous stops? I understand that's not with the same kind of.
Yeah, no, I have it right here actually. So let me pull it up. So Nitro at Purdue, and we go back to Georgia, he had like 3% of the targets, but Nitro at Purdue had 19% target share, 6.8 yards per target, 14.7 yards per reception, 74 targets, and 34 catches. So like what I like to look at, Rob, is like, what is your catch rate? And catch rate can be impacted by different things. Like, was the ball online? Like, did you have a chance to catch it? Was it the quarterback's fault or your fault? But Nitro Tuggle caught 45.9% of his catches, or 45.9% of his targets. And then you converse that with a Jaden Sellers, who caught 73% of his targets from Lenore Sellers. Well, makes a heck of a lot of sense. They've been throwing the ball back and forth since they were born, practically. And you know, if you're under fire and you know what route your brother's running, like, I'm gonna throw it that way, right? But yeah, I mean, with Donovan Murph, he had 22 targets last season. He caught 14 of them, 63.6% catch rate, and 9 yards per target. So, like, for me, Rob, like, when I look at this, I think about like just returners, I think about Nick Harbor, I think about Donovan Murph, I think about Jaden Sellers, then I think about DJ Black, I think about Nitro Tuggle, I think about the other guys, and I think the Gamecocks might even have like double digit pass catchers that were 4 stars coming out of high school. So you kind of wonder what that rotation is going to look like. I can tell you, Rob, that Kendall Briles, over his last 9 seasons, so like since Baylor, his wide receiver 1 has averaged 92 targets a year. Last year, Nick Harver had 52 targets. Dre Jacobs had 50 targets. Bryles, wide receiver 2, 65 targets. Wide receiver 3, 47 targets. Wide receiver 4, 30 targets. So that's 234 targets over the last 7 years that you have to think Bryles wants to do at South Carolina. He's not just going to wipe his butt with his playbook and say, well, not doing that anymore.
Right.
So you look at those yards per target and you wonder, like, what does a Nick Harbor do with 92 targets? Can he handle 92 targets? Is his route tree there yet? Can Jaden Sellers, Donovan Murph, Nitro Tuggle, DJ Black, we can go down the list. You understand what I'm doing here.
Yep.
So, Rob, my question to you is, what wide receiver on the Gamecocks roster would you like to see 92 targets for next year?
Ooh.
And why is it not Nick Harper?
Who do I want to see 92 targets for? Man, this is tough because I want to say Jaden Sellers so bad.
Yeah.
Just given his ability to, you know, to work underneath, I think. And here's the thing about Jaden that I've said all along, and I don't think it's a knock on him. I think he's the safety blanket for Lenore Sellers because of the chemistry.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on right now in OTAs where quarterbacks and receivers can be building chemistry. I don't think anybody can catch him. You know what I mean? I don't think it's possible to build the type of chemistry that these two brothers have. And because Jaden Sellers has the ability and the skill and the talent to play at a high level in the SEC, then that chemistry and that safety blanket nature and that comfortability all really comes into play.
Well, I'll take it one step further, Rob. Why did Wes Welker get 100 targets a year from Tom Brady? Because he could play all over the field. He could catch a ball at the line of scrimmage. He could catch a ball 5 yards off line of scrimmage. He could catch a ball 18, 30 yards down.
And as a lifelong Patriots fan, he can catch a 99-yard touchdown down the seam where they play zero, and he gets by the nickel, and Tom Brady lobs it over the top, and it's a 99-yard touchdown in Miami. So he can do a little bit of everything, Matt. Yeah, to your point.
Yeah, and why did Rob Gronkowski become a Hall of Fame tight end? Because he was good enough, number one, he earned the target. So, you know, I think it's interesting you say Jaden Sellers because I think Jaden Sellers fits a 92 target type of scheme perfectly. Because what do you have to do, and Rob, you just said it, to get 92 targets?
Yeah,
get open everywhere.
Yeah, you're finding space is really what it is. And some of that separation and some of it is understanding zone scheme and being able to sit down. So I think that he has the quickness to kind of do that. A lot of this, Matt, happens, especially in a Kendall Bryles offense too. It happens relatively close to the line of scrimmage where things are going to move quickly, where you're going to find yourself in open space.
You're going to find yourself in one-on-one coverage on the outside.
Yeah,
and you make a guy miss.
They're going to get the ball out quick, whether it is making a guy miss in press, and you're getting a ball over the top really quickly, or you're finding space somewhere in that 5 to 7 yard range, and then you're going to catch it and go. That's where you're going to get that volume of targets, I think, in the nature of this offense, because they're going to keep you moving.
Well, it's so interesting you said Jaden Sellers, because like in my mind, I'm thinking about a video game, and I just want to target Nick Harbor 92 times, and every time he touches it, potentially he can go off to the races. But if you have a guy that can garner 92 targets, and you have another guy that can garner 65 and Nick Harbor, like, hey, guess what you're doing there?
I think
that's when you're picking and choosing when you're taking your shots.
No doubt about it. I think the guys that are built for this are Jaden Sellers, Nitro Tuggle, Donovan Murph, Mazio Bennett.
Yeah.
Those types of guys, possession receivers, are the ones who are going to, I think, get the most targets. And that does, Matt, I think, really set up. I think about, you know, if you want to use Gamecock comparisons in the era's past when we've seen them be really, really good, guys like Ace Sanders and Bruce Ellington. Bruce Ellington is a receiver that came in and just found himself open all the time.
Yeah.
And didn't necessarily have all the size in the world to play the wide receiver position, but knew where to be and that's where the ball ended up. So I think about those guys with that body type. Can they utilize that skill set? Can they have the football IQ to get where they need to be? Soak in this offense. I think those are the guys. And to your point, really pulls down the pressure off of Harbor, and he gets a lot more explosive plays out of that.
I think so too, man. You look at, you know, wide receiver 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, put them in a hat. Like, they can go a couple of different directions, and we're not even sure yet. We haven't had fall practice. We haven't installed the offense, all that kind of stuff. But I mean, I'm excited to think about 234 targets going to wide receivers who average, you know, potentially 9-10 yards a target. Like, that, yep. That's really exciting. When you look at the running game, you know, when Browse had Devin Singletary, that was 301 carries. The lowest carries a running back one has had is 110, but guess what? They all average 5.5 yards per carry. So that when you take the passing game into it, you think about like what those guys have been able to do in space and what they can turn plays into. Then you look at the running game and you say, okay, well, maybe it is Matt Fuller breakout season. Maybe Shane Beamer's right when he says he can be an all-time great. He can be one of the best. You go to running back 2, Rob, and they're still averaging 80 carries with a high of 114 and a low of 48. And guess what? The running back 2 averages 4.8 yards per carry. So you do all this math, and you can talk about Lenore Sellers and the way that he can run, the way that he can make things happen, and you see the potential for something scary. And I'm not saying 50 points a game going to take the SEC by storm. SEC has good defenses, and SEC has good offenses, and the defense might not put the Gamecocks in a situation to be able to run and get 11 yards a target. But I see all this, Rob, and I just ask you, like, are you optimistic?
Yep. Yeah, I'm definitely optimistic because this is something that we haven't had at South Carolina, but something that JC has said, something that I think a lot of people have been able to see is needed in Columbia in terms of a college offense, something that's going to make them a little bit different, even though we're seeing this scheme kind of take hold across the SEC at this point. It might not be as different as it would have been, you know, 5 to 7 years ago when some other teams first brought it in. My question to your point about the running game and Lenore Sellers, is he running back 2 in the way that this, the way you break that down, does he kind of slot in there in what becomes the second leading carries if they decide to use him in that high of a volume? And I personally think they probably should.
I 100% agree with you. Look, you know, Rob and I, we had all this stuff to talk about. We didn't know if we were going to get through it. We were worried about it.
We
were worried about going too long, and we have gone too long. So we got to get Rob out of here for SEC Sunday night. But real quick, Rob, Coastal Carolina, they are out of their regional. They lost today. You have Steve Sabins at West Virginia still playing right now. His season might end tonight. It might end tomorrow. It might keep going to next week. As far as I know, and I know I do see something in the chat box here, just got word Kevin saying at Coastal Carolina. I've been checking my phone. I haven't got that word. If you've scooped us, congratulations. That's awesome. I would love for it to be scooped on the late night Gamecock show, quite frankly. But as far as I'm concerned, Rob, I think there's still 1-2, 1A, 1B in the clubhouse. I think if it's Schnall, something probably will happen in the next 72 hours. If it's Sabins and he loses today or tomorrow, something happens in the next 96 hours. And if not, I think that maybe you start to wonder what's going on.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I was going to say that again, $1 for thebigspur.com. You get the Big Spur, you get Gamecock Central, you get everything. It's not $1 a month. It is $1 period until the start of fall camp. So make sure that you go and do that so that you can follow along coverage, not just an announcement, because everybody's going to hear the announcement, but everything underneath about what makes this hire special and what makes it the right guy. JB is doing a great job of that, along with everybody else on the staff, kind of covering what's been going on here. JC, Matt, and of course all the guys over at Gamecock Central as well. So go do that and follow along. Just to say, JB said the same thing that you said there, Matt, in an article just yesterday, I believe, that he would expect it to happen quickly with Kevin Schnall. So it's done in terms of the Coastal Carolina baseball season. So it's now time. You might get some exit interview type of deal or something with some of his guys. you know, we've seen coaches move before and pull some players with them via the transfer portal. So I wouldn't rule that out either in terms of either one of these coaches conducting their exit interviews and saying, hey, just saying, might want to make a move. So, I don't think that this is going to be – I thought we were going to be in a situation, Matt, where maybe we were drawing out and waiting a little bit into June, and we've had this question of the portal opens on June 1st. What happens when if these coaches are playing later into the month, so on and so forth? Well, we know for at least one of them that's high atop the candidate list, that's not going to happen. So you could potentially have almost an entire transfer portal to get it done.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with this. Look, you know, I checked in with sources right before I popped on this show. As of for what I'm hearing, Kevin Schnell hasn't said no. If that's changed in the last hour, then maybe Rob and I will be back on at 10 p.m. tonight to talk about it. But I don't think you go wrong with either of these candidates. Honestly, they're cut from the same mold. But, y'all, we got to get out of here. Rob's got to get to SEC Sunday night, which means all of us also have to get to SEC Sunday night. Looking forward to watching Rob tonight. And thank y'all for being here with us. When you hang out with us, you give us the most valuable thing you have, your time. We appreciate you. We're excited for next Sunday, and we will be back better than ever next week. Thank y'all.